you weren't here last week, let me give you a quick intro to Galatians. The churches in Galatia were muddling up the law of God and the gospel of God, just muddling the two up. When I was at school, normally when we were away on a camp somewhere, somebody would occasionally think it was very funny to swap the salt and the sugar. And they'd put salt in the sugar bowl and, you know, sugar in the salt shaker. That's one way to completely ruin someone's cereal or a cup of tea. And that was no big deal. But it was a very big deal to Paul that false teachers in Galatia were muddling up the law and the gospel. Because they don't mix. They're both important. They both come from God. They're both holy. But they don't mix. When you try to mix them, you end up with no gospel at all, as we saw last week. And it says in chapter 1, verse 7, that very thing. They ended up believing no gospel at all. The law and the gospel are kind of like oil and water. They're both valuable. They're both important. But they don't mix. And let me explain that, because the law says, do this and live. The gospel says it's been done. Jesus has done it all, trust only in him. The law says do, the gospel says done. Everything that needs to be done for us to be made right with God has been done. There's nothing more to do. Now, how could you possibly mix up those two realities? In terms of our acceptance before God, and this is the key, in terms of our acceptance before God, there is either more to do or it's all been done. And clearly it can't be both. Let's say you're coordinating a big event at work and someone asks you, is everything done that needs to be done? And you say, yes, I'm so relieved, it's all sorted. But we can't rest yet because there's, you know, we still have to do the sound check. And they say, oh, okay, so there's still more to be done. And you say, no, there's absolutely nothing more to do, just a few things. You don't need a degree in logic to see that you cannot mix do and done. You can't mix those two things. The law says never stop doing, there's always more. And the gospel says it's finished. The law says be perfect, and the gospel says Jesus is perfect in your place for your sake. The law says be righteous, and the gospel says Jesus is your righteousness. The law diagnoses our sin, and the gospel delivers us from our sin. The law condemns, and the gospel sets free. There is simply no way that we can mix law and gospel. They're both really, really important. They're both from God. They both matter. They're both holy and good. But they don't mix when it comes to us standing before God and being counted as righteous. And yet the problem was that this is exactly what the false teachers in the Galatian churches were trying to do. And it was throwing people into confusion. Verse 7, we see that the people they're troubled, they're confused. Because these false teachers, because of what they were teaching, people were actually deserting the God of grace. And they were turning to a different gospel, verse 6, which, as it says in verse 7, is no gospel at all. And one particular issue, there were a few things that were being pressed, but one particular issue, one presenting issue in this muddle was whether a Gentile believer had to be circumcised in order to really be counted by God as one of his people. And they were saying, these false teachers were saying, we cannot be counted as righteous in God's sight only because of Jesus. We also need to do certain things according to the law, namely, for one matter, be circumcised. Chapter 6, verse 12, Paul says they were trying to compel people to be circumcised. It would be like, you know, trying to think of a modern equivalent. It would be like people saying today, and by the way, there are people in churches who say this today, that if you're not baptized, then how can you possibly be sure of being saved? I mean, yes, have faith in Jesus, but you've got to be baptized, they say. Baptism is really important for us to be made right with God. It's an instrumental cause of our being made right with God, they say. It's through our baptism that God infuses his righteousness into us. So you really don't want to die without being baptized, they say. At the very least, you don't want to die without at least intending to be baptized. You might die before you actually get a chance to be baptized, but at least if you were planning on it, that could count as if you were actually baptized. But otherwise, you'd be in a very, very serious position. And that's what some people think today. And it was the same kind of argument being used in Paul's day for the necessity of circumcision. And by the way, that is why, and you'll know this, of course, that in some really, really tragic cases today, there are sometimes emergency baptisms that take place in the hospital, sometimes even administered by a nurse, because clergy are never going to get there in time. And those are, of course, really sad and painful situations. So, you know, the relevance of this letter has not gone away. Whether people try to add circumcision, as in Paul's day, or baptism, or anything else at all to what Jesus has done, Paul says no. It is for freedom that Christ has set us free, chapter 5, verse 1. Therefore, stand firm, Paul says, and do not let yourselves be burdened again by a yoke of slavery. Whatever we try to add to Jesus, got to do this, got to do that, it perverts the gospel into a yoke of slavery. Have you done all the things you need to do? Have you performed what needs to be performed? Have you done enough by your actions? That's not the gospel. That's the burden of religion. The Jesus plus gospel, which I tried to communicate to the kids earlier, the Jesus plus gospel is no gospel at all. And yeah, isn't it true that this is an issue for all of us, that we all have this default position whereby we tend, all of us, to relate to God on the basis of what we've done, on the basis of our own performance? I mean, this is a problem for me. I very often start to think that God, I mean, I know it's not right in my head, but in my heart I kind of start to think that God maybe approves of me and accepts me because of A, B, and C that I've contributed or that I've done, how I'm living. May I never boast, Paul writes in the final chapter, may I never boast except in the cross of our Lord Jesus Christ. In other words, don't put any confidence whatsoever in anything you've done, not circumcision, not baptism, not Sabbath keeping, not church going, not penance, not charity, not anything. Could be anything, and it's not anything. Only hope in what has been done for you at the cross, not in anything you do for yourself. That's basically what the letter to the Galatians is all about. Now, people heard this, and they said, oh, that Paul, boy, he's always taking things too far. There was a guy in my year of school who earned the nickname Too Far. If there was ever a bit of banter, you know, he always took it too far. If there was a practical joke, you would be sure that he would take it too far. If it was a dare, he would just go too far. And that's what people said about Paul. Yes, of course, God is gracious. He gave us his son, but we can't take grace too far. You know, Paul is just being a people pleaser. That's really what he is. He tells people what they want to hear. And Paul says in verse 10, oh, really? Really? If I was a people pleaser, verse 10, then why would I have become a servant of Christ? I mean, I joined with the persecuted. Remember? I'm clearly not trying to please men. But still, they undermined him. He's gone too far, they said. You know, well, here's what's happened, they said. Paul's been up to Jerusalem, and he's heard the apostles teach about grace, and he's just taken their message, and he's just run with it and developed it too far. And so Paul continues to defend himself. Verse 11, he says, look, I did not make up my message. You know, I wasn't sitting at home just, you know, developing it and working it, you know, working it into something else in my own mind. I did not even receive it from any man. Verse 12, what I preach because it came to me by revelation from Jesus Christ. He met me on the road to Damascus. I got what I preached from him. So if you think I've taken grace too far, then blame him, Paul is saying. I mean, it's not, Paul's, he then goes on to say that it's not like, he says, it's not like I heard a good sermon from Peter one day, and then by my own logic and by my own reasoning, I sat at home and gradually developed what he said into a message of more radical grace. No. He says, when I was converted, I didn't even go to Jerusalem to see the apostles. I didn't even go to see them, verse 17. Not for 3 years. So I wasn't taught the gospel by them. I didn't need to hear the gospel from them because I heard it directly from the risen Christ himself. But I can assure you that when they heard of my preaching, verse 24, they praised God because of me. You see, Paul was an apostle just like them. He says it right in verse 1, stamps it right up there at the beginning. Paul, an apostle of Jesus Christ, sent not from man nor by man, but by Jesus Christ and God the Father. He is not lesser than the other apostles, nor has he taken their message and run with it and developed it even more. No, they love his message. They're right with him. So don't let these false teachers try to tell you that I've just heard something and then taken it too far. No. I think that we all meet people who echo the too far argument. They have a great knack of taking a joyful new Christian, and while they don't actually say it, they somehow communicate, now let me tell you, I'm glad you know the joy of sins forgiven and peace with God, but there's a lot you need to learn. Don't ever take grace too far. We don't laugh a lot round here because the holiness of God is a very serious business. The holiness of God is a very serious business. That's why Jesus had to die on the cross. Sin had to be paid for, and it was. And now we're free. And if we don't then hear the gospel as the news that makes our hearts sing for joy, then we're not really hearing it. In light of Paul's own story, there's no way that anyone was going to take away his joy. I mean, his own story is a brilliant illustration, isn't it, of the fact that it is a gospel of grace and only grace. He knew all about the religious life. I mean, he has spent years trying to live according to Jewish customs and traditions. He even says that in terms of religion, verse 14, he says he was doing better than almost everyone in his own generation. I mean, I was advancing beyond many of my own age, he says, and extremely zealous for the traditions of my fathers, he says. He was extremely zealous for moral righteousness. And yet for all that, it had never made him right with God. For all his religion, he was still actually resisting God. I've been reading Martin Luther's commentary, the reformer Martin Luther. He's got a commentary on Galatians. It's just dynamite. And he writes about his own religious life when he was a monk. He calls it his cloistered life. And this is what he said. And by the way, I think it could apply to any of us in any church tradition. He says, outwardly I kept myself chaste, poor, and obedient. I was much given to fasting, watching, praying, saying of masses, and the like. Yet under the cloak of my outward respectability, I continually mistrusted, doubted, feared, hated, and blasphemed God, he said. My righteousness was a filthy puddle. Satan loves such saints, said Luther. They are his darlings. Luther, like Paul, he knew very well indeed that it's never too far to say that good and upright religious people need the gospel every bit as much as anyone else. And note too that Paul, despite all his sin, was never too far from God. This is the beauty of the gospel. He was never too, I mean, you think of how he had lived. Yes, he had lived trying to live an upright life, but think at the same time of all his sin, he had tried to kill the apostles before he became one himself. And yet he says in verse 15, God set me apart from birth. It's an incredible statement that over all the years of Paul's animosity towards the church, God was actually already with his hand upon him, preparing him for gospel ministry. You know, we think we know when God first had his hand upon our lives. But the truth is that God has been at work in our lives long before we even turned to him. He uses all of the experiences, even our waywardness, he uses it all to prepare us ultimately for a life of gospel ministry. We've never wandered too far from his loving reach. It says in verse 15 as well that God was pleased to call him. This hater of Christians, God was pleased to call him to himself by his grace. And I guess when we know love like that, then it frees us to be authentic. As Paul is here, Paul's not trying to pretend anymore. Paul's just like, yeah, I was screwed up, but God saved me by grace. And that's what grace does. It allows us to be more authentic, doesn't it? To be completely authentic when we really get it into our hearts. To be honest about our own sin. You know, at one time, Paul was so zealous to be seen as upright, but now he's happy to admit the truth that actually he was resisting God, verse 13. Steve Brown tells a story of three students at a very fine university. And on the night before a very important exam, they got drunk and the next day overslept and they missed their exam. And they went to the professor and they said, "Sir, really sorry, we were out of town for personal reasons and we had a flat tire driving back. Could we have a chance to make up the exam?" The professor said, "No problem, boys. One of you go into room 206. One of you go into room 212. One of you go into room 216. I'll bring you the exam. There's no problem." Students were elated. They praised God all the way to their respective rooms. Shortly, the professor gave out the exam, and it was just one bit of paper. This was it. "This exam only requires that you answer one question. Which tire?" You know, those students could maintain the facade. They could run away, or they could be honest. But like the professor, aren't people looking for honesty? Don't they need to see that we're real? That we're not pretend sinners with a pretend Messiah, but we're real sinners with a real Messiah? You know, they need to see that we're real, that when we say that Christ died for us, that it's clear we really believe that we'd be utterly lost without him. And is that what we're getting across? Or could it be that we're not that real? Really, that we give the impression that God loves and accepts us because we do our bit? I don't know. But I think this is a danger for me. And I've met people who don't come to church because they think that they aren't and could never be good enough. Like, what's that about? I want people to know that if the Christian faith is not for sinners, then it's not for me. And if it is for sinners like me, if Jesus really has done it all for me, then don't ever let it be perverted into something I must achieve. To him be the glory. Amen.